It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz, in for Kate Archer-Kent. There were more than 600 reports of sexual assault in the National Guard in 2019. National Guard units have buried sexual assault allegations, and they've retaliated against women who come forward and speak up. It's happening all over the country. These are the latest findings of a new report in the Cap Times and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The woman who has been bringing these stories to light, who's been digging deep and trying to understand what's happening, is Caitlin Farrell. She's a public affairs and investigative reporter for the Cap Times in Madison. And I have to tell you, this stuff is hard to hear. It's hard to think about and talk about. But unless we do talk about it, you might not know this is happening. And nothing may change. Have you ever served in the Guard? We'd love to hear from you. We're at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Caitlin, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So give us a sense of the scope of the problem at the National Guard. What's happening?
That's a good question. You know, part of what I focused on in my reporting and really wanted to bring to light is that to some extent, when we're talking about the Guard, and when I say the Guard, I refer to it really as sort of the collective of state-based militias, we really don't have a great grasp of just how fully prevalent this is across all guards across the whole country, in part because the data that's able to be collected by the Department of Defense is so weak. I thought that discrepancy, and I think that's something that makes the Guard really distinct from what we know about the problem in active duty forces, is really important to highlight. And that's part of, you know, why I wanted to focus on that in my story. What the Department of Defense does report, however, is that although there's a lot of allegations that they don't have data for, the allegations that they do have data for shows that this, along with sexual assault in other branches of the military as well, has gone up over the last several years. In the most recent Guard report to Congress, the numbers of sexual assault actually were the highest that it had been in the last 5 years. And so we have seen a steady increase, but you know, there's a real dearth of quality data when it comes to how state guards across the country are dealing with this, and that is really part of the problem.
So you mentioned that the number of reports have gone up recently. Do you think that's happening because more people are stepping forward and reporting? Are we seeing more awareness, or what do you think that means?
Yeah, that's a good question. That rationale is certainly what I hear often from Guard and other military leaders, is that the National Guard Bureau, when I asked them about this, said that that's why they believe it is going up. And I think that could be true. I guess it's hard to know for sure. You know, I mean, I think that the numbers have continued to go up over the last few years. And so I think that whether they're going up because folks experiencing this feel more comfortable coming forward is one thing, but I think the fact remains that it still continues to occur. And that's a problem. I think that, you know, one of the main themes of the story that I wrote last week and really tried to focus on too is that, you know, coming, it obviously being sexually assaulted is awful and is violating in, you know, one of the most intimate ways, but you know, many, if not all, of the people that I've talked to who've experienced this say that what does happen after they come forward is actually worse than the assault itself. And so, you know, if the line from the National Guard really is that people feel so much more comfortable coming forward and they really have confidence in the system, you know, that is a bit at odds with many of the victims that I have spoken to who face, you know, retaliation of a variety of forms. And that retaliation is really what ends up being completely devastating to their career and then to them mentally and emotionally as well.
So one of the women you spoke with, you spoke to Christine Clayburgh, and she served in the California Guard. She described being assaulted by one of her colleagues and then struggling to get justice in the military system.
It took 6 months for the investigators to begin their investigation. The rapist declined to speak. I spoke for 3 hours. I did not have an advocate. It was a month and a half before I got any medical care or mental health care. And by that time, I was having the thought, unstoppable thoughts of suicide.
Caitlin, what happened to Christine Clayburg?
Sure. So, yeah, Christine, she served as a loadmaster in a C-130 cargo plane in the California Air Guard. And it was shortly after she actually returned from a combat deployment where she was meeting up with some Guard colleagues just on the evening before a drill weekend where all the, you know, Guard members come together and they drill one weekend a month. This was at the near the Channel Islands Air Base in California. And so she had met up with some colleagues at the hotel that they were staying at just before that drill weekend, and says, according to her, that she joined them and they were drinking, just having a few glasses of wine at a happy hour. And so she had drinks from a glass of wine that was poured for her by a male colleague who had saved it for her. And so she didn't pour her own drink and, you know, took a few sips of that, and says that after she did that, she remembers absolutely nothing and woke up in his bed the next morning, completely terrified, unaware of how she got there with absolutely no memory of that. And so she believes that that her drink was drugged and she was sexually assaulted. Her medical records later corroborated some aspects of her story, but I think by the time it was hard to completely conclusively confirm or find drugs in her system by the time that she was able to go to police. But that happened to her back in April of 2015.
And it gives me goosebumps talking about this, hearing her story, and you feature her in your story, and she describes what happened to her after that incident that she describes. What happens next when she approaches her chain of command and she tries to address the issue?
Sure. So she, Christine tells me that, you know, what she really had wanted to do all along is really just get time off of her guard. So she had been serving, the guard had effectively been her full-time job, which for many airmen and soldiers, the guard is a part-time job, as I said, where they still work in the civilian world. But this was effectively her full-time job. She was taking on assignments. And so she, you know, one of the things that makes sexual assault in the military quite difficult is you can't just decide to not show up to work or, you know, take time off. And you have to get permission to just not show up. And so for her, that became really difficult. She tried to get a transfer out of her unit, and actually move out of the California Guard into a different state guard, and those efforts were blocked. And she really just wanted to get paid time off. It's called being put on military medical orders, and you have to fill out paperwork and kind of follow some steps in order to be qualified for that, to get mental health care and hopefully get better and then return to work. And she just experienced a complete maze of bureaucracy and a lot of runaround in trying to get that done. And so the runaround she experienced just kind of exacerbated the mental health problems she was already having. She felt betrayed by her command, and had said that she initially made some confidential reports that were leaked to her unit. And people were talking about it. People were commenting, you know, and discussing it on social media. And so, as she says, you know, there was a video, what you had played is a video that accompanied my longer story. What she says in that video, and again, what is a common refrain from many of the people that I have spoken to, is that that whole experience, just trying to figure out what I need to do to get put on medical orders so that I can get the care that I need and return to doing my job, and sort of feeling like they're thwarted and retaliated against by their coworkers in command, is far more devastating than what she experienced that night at the hotel. And it's the trauma from that really that continues to be with her today. And she's still really working through. And so that's really, I think, the retaliation aspect, which I think we are increasingly hearing more about, I think, is a real feature of the problem here.
And I want to hear more about that. We do need to check in on the weather this morning, but we're talking with Caitlin Farrell. She's a reporter with the Cap Times in Madison. And we are talking about her latest reporting in the Cap Times and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about sexual assault and harassment allegations in the Wisconsin National Guard. We'll be back in a minute. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Molly Stentz. We're speaking with investigative reporter Caitlin Farrell. She's just published her latest findings on sexual assault in the National Guard, documenting abuse women have endured, examining how the Guard administers justice. Have you served in the Guard? Do you know this is going on? What do you think? What needs to change? We're at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Caitlin, you were describing the retaliation that the women that you spoke to for this story described to you after they went through the chain of command and they reported the incidences that happened to them. What happened? What do you see the National Guard? What did they do? How did they respond?
Well, it has varied to some extent. The response is a little bit different in each case, and it kind of depends, I think, on the command, of course. And I think that, you know, it's worth noting, I think, also that, you know, my piece, I have done a lot of reporting, of course, on the Wisconsin Guard, and we had a regime change when it came to our top commander there back, you know, in late 2019. But, you know, what I really was looking at the Guard that is national in scope. And so I think that part of the problem about why it can be so difficult to really nail down how command might be retaliating in the Guard and what they're doing is that the Guard is really distinct entities in each state run by different people in each state that really is not under the direct control of the Department of Defense. And so that can make reform when it comes to addressing various types of retaliation quite difficult because we really would need change on the state level to change how the guards in those states are operating. But as you said, I mean, retaliation can take a variety of forms. It often ends in effectively ending the victim's military careers, delaying health care, not putting them on medical orders in order to get paid so they can take time off. And a lot of getting, not being able to really guide people as far as navigating the process and the deep bureaucracy that the Guard can have because being both a state and a federal entity, I think that for the average person outside of the Guard, but even the average member in it, trying to figure out how they can really get help and who they can really trust when effectively every resource within one state all kind of comes down into the same singular chain of command can be really difficult to figure out.
Caitlin, who does have ultimate oversight? As you mentioned, it's complex, right? Every state has its own structure, and then you have the federal funding component. Who ultimately has accountability here?
Right. That's part of the problem. There's not a lot of, I think, independent oversight and real accountability that has teeth. At the end of the day, the governor of each state or territory is the commander in chief of their own guard. But the sticky thing about that then is that guard members can serve under orders where they serve at the direction of their governor, and then the governor has or appoints, it varies in state to state, a commander called the adjutant general. And then that adjutant general is really the chief and the top of the chain of command for that guard. And every position really ultimately falls under that individual. But it's tricky because guard members can also be federalized, which means that the president can also ask them to go overseas and be deployed in combat zones to support our active duty full-time troops. And so I think part of what the last year has shown us in particular is that The Guard is an incredibly important and indispensable military arm, the most public-facing military arm that has played a crucial role in our state. And I think that makes accountability and oversight even more important for the public to really understand at the end of the day who's in control. I think changes that can happen in Wisconsin can happen in our state legislature, but there could be some more oversight measures as far as federal funding in particular that Congress could enact as well. And indeed, there had been recommendations. If you recall, there was a big federal report that came out showing a lot of the problems in Wisconsin that had persisted. And they recommended that our state make several changes to our Wisconsin Code of Military Justice. And that hasn't happened yet in order to modernize it as far as how it deals with sexual assault and other issues. So it's sort of a multi-pronged approach. And again, really complicated as far as, who's really accountable.
Right, because there's this entire separate justice system, as you mentioned, than our civilian criminal justice system. So,
right,
you mentioned Congress and the federal investigation and what's happened since 2019, since they looked into it and documented these abuses. What has happened over the past year?
Sure. So, like I had mentioned, because there had been reports surfacing from various sexual assault victims in the Wisconsin Guard, eventually, Governor Evers, along with Tammy Baldwin, asked the National Guard Bureau, which is a federal agency that provides some measure of oversight to the guards, but it doesn't regulate them or really have the power to order them around or tell them what to do. So the Guard Bureau did come into the state and did a top-down review of how it was handling sexual assaults. And that resulted in the resignation of our former longtime Adjutant General Donald Dunbar. He had been still investigated by the Air Force. He was an Air Force officer for completely violating federal policy when it comes to how the state should handle sexual assault. And so those types of cases should be referred out and be investigated by independent investigators from the Guard Bureau in the D.C. area. And yet those cases were being kept inside the state and being handled internally. There were a host of other issues that came up in that report as well. And I had noted in my story, too, that Guard officials are supposed to notify civilian law enforcement when sexual assault reports are made, and it had done that in very few cases. I think one ongoing issue as well that many folks have pointed out to me is that, at the end of the day, obviously our top commander lost his job, and we have a new commander now, but, that the commander that had spent years violating state and federal protocol is able to retire and receive a substantial military pension and retirement benefits. And that's a pretty common pattern for folks who may have positions of power and then were found to abuse that power. Many folks say that lack of accountability, really, as far as what he's able to kind of retire and get his retirement, and that's fine, continues to be a problem because folks who are bad actors, they still end up fine because they still just are able to honorably retire. But it's a tricky system because the military has its own way of handling that, if that makes sense.
Right. And you mentioned we have a new general in charge of the Wisconsin National Guard here. Have you seen changes over the past year?
Well, the guard here, says that it has made some changes. I think I know that there was another higher level commander on the air side of the guard who lost his job also over how those issues were handled. But it's hard to know. I think one issue, I think transparency is a difficult and ongoing challenge with the guard because it's hard to really know if real change is being made. I think, when the Guard Bureau came in, they had mandated that the state, they made recommendations and said the state should, revamp how it deals with this issue in a variety of ways. I think they've created or revamped a council and kind of streamlined some of its policies and created a new plan. And so I think there's lots of strategies and plans, and I believe the Adjutant General also replaced our state SARC. But
yes,
I think
right.
I'm the question that I guess I have, and I think victims have and other people who have experiences have, is that, you know, the problems that surfaced in that 2019 report did not all happen by former Adjutant General Donald Dunbar. It didn't happen
right.
in a vacuum. There was a staff of people enabling that. And I just wonder where the accountability is for all the other failures that happened over the last decade that
yes.
were highlighted in that report.
Caitlin, and we are going to hear from the leader of the Wisconsin National Guard coming up next. I want to thank you so much. We are up against the clock, but thank you so much for joining us this morning. Caitlin Farrell, thank you.
Thank you.
Caitlin Farrell is a public affairs and investigative reporter for the Cap Times in Madison. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. We're talking about assaults in the military, specifically in the National Guard. And we're asking for an update from the leader of our Wisconsin National Guard. Major General Paul Knapp took the helm in March of last year, right as the coronavirus pandemic hit. Governor Evers appointed him to replace one of the longest-serving leaders of the Wisconsin Guard, who resigned over his handling of assault investigations. Since last year, General Knapp has overseen the longest domestic deployment in Wisconsin National Guard history. National Guard soldiers, they've been an essential part of the state's pandemic response. They've served as poll workers. They've been called upon to back up law enforcement all across the state. It's been a year. Have you served in the Guard? We'd love to hear from you this hour. 1-800-642-1234 or ideas@WPR.org. Major General Knapp, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning, Molly. Thanks so much for having me on this morning to talk about the progress that we've made on this very important topic over the last year. I appreciate the introduction. It has been an unprecedented year. But one of the things that I really want to get across today is that dealing with sexual assault in the National Guard, specifically the Wisconsin National Guard, has never taken a backseat to any of the other efforts that we've undertaken over the past year in regards to COVID and election support and the number of things that you pointed out. When I first took command, in fact, on the very first day, what I put up for my commanders in the senior leader conference was the following. I said that my number one priority as it relates to sexual assault and harassment is to create an environment where anyone in the organization, regardless of status, feels safe and protected in coming forward. I actually originally wrote it on a sticky note, post-it, and it's still on my computer monitor today. So definitely excited to be able to talk about this very difficult subject and share with you some of the progress we've made over the last year.
Well, and we're glad you're with us. And I'd love to know what we do know about what's happened over the past year. Do you know how many reports there have been, how many assaults we've seen over the past year?
Yes, definitely. And I track them, now we track them daily. In fact, there are a number of ways that we have improved the process. First off, as you mentioned earlier, was in the previous segment, we talked about the Office of Complex Investigations from the National Guard Bureau and their investigation into Wisconsin National Guard and how sexual assault had been handled in the past. And the biggest thing in terms of administrative handling of these cases that we've changed is we've taken all of those 21 recommendations from the National Guard Bureau and implemented them on the timeline that we coordinated with Governor Evers. So basically by last September, we were completely in compliance with all federal and state guidelines on how to handle sexual assault when it's reported. Now, in terms of reporting, one of the things the governor and I have talked about in the past and continue to talk about is the number of reports. It's The data is very difficult, as been previously mentioned, to gather because of two different types of reporting that we can have in the military and also in the Wisconsin National Guard, and that's a restricted report and an unrestricted report. So an unrestricted report comes in through our sexual assault response coordinators, and then that is handled like any other report that would go to a civilian entity. And the big change there, as was pointed out in the OCI investigation, is that only there was a small percentage of those were being referred to local law enforcement. Today, and since I've taken command, 100% of the sexual allegations, sexual assault allegations, are reported to local law enforcement. And so that's one of the big changes.
And you said 100% of all of them or just the unrestricted reports?
Yeah, great. Thanks for that question, because that's an important distinction. And it really makes looking at the data difficult, because a restricted report, what that does is it allows a service member to report through the same structure, through the sexual assault response coordinators, and then it allows them to do it without command being notified. And what that is, it's kind of the equivalent of a civilian going to a crisis center or something, but not wanting to go to law enforcement or not wanting to go to the police. So those individuals, we're able, through a restricted reporting, we are able to offer them the services. Number one, any medical services, any psychological care that they might need or want. We give them the exact same care as a survivor that we would someone who did an unrestricted report, but it doesn't go through that through the investigative process, and that's by choice, at the choice of the individual making the report.
Okay. And so do we know how many reports there were last year?
Right now, we went up 30% from 2019 to 2020. And obviously the numbers here for 2021 are not in yet. And the big thing there is by creating an environment where people, where survivors feel comfortable and trust in their organization, that we expected that number to go up. So it went up by about 30% from 2019 to 2020.
Okay. And you think
that's
a result of more people reporting? More.
Absolutely.
Coming forward?
And most importantly, feeling comfortable and protected reporting. One of the things that... Go ahead.
Do you think you're capturing everything that's happening? Because I know that those who work in this field, they say that underreporting is a consistent problem that you see across the board. You see it all over civilian life, that many people just never feel that it's worth bringing a complaint if they can't see an outcome. Do you think you're actually getting reports? You're seeing, you're able to see what's happening within your institution?
Yeah, I think that's a key distinction. You know, my goal would be to have 100% of these incidents reported. But like you said, that across the board is probably unattainable across civilian life, military. There are certain people who are victims to sexual assault that just don't feel comfortable reporting for any number of reasons. It's a very, as you can imagine, an extremely traumatic event. And my hope would that we would get 100% of those events reported. That would be my goal. My goal would be to get 100% of them reported. Do we get there? Only time will tell. And that's another
topic.
You know, time. You know, I have to establish this trust with the entire force over time. I think we're on the right track. Seeing that increase from 2019 to 2020. Is one of the few data points that we can use to measure the success of our program.
We're speaking with Major General Paul Knapp of the Wisconsin National Guard, and we'd love to hear from you this hour. We're at 1-800-642-1234. We're going to go to the phone lines and bring in Josh from Oak Creek. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, guys. I just have a question. I appreciate that the unrestricted are going 100% to the local police departments now. However, jurisdiction-wise, how much authority is the military actually giving to these detectives to do their job, being that the oversight is still going to be military justice only? I'll take my comment off the air, or question off the air. Thanks.
Thanks, Josh.
Hey, Major. Josh. Thanks for that question. And well, first of all, they have 100% jurisdiction because the local law enforcement agency that's contacted is the agency that has jurisdiction over the matter. So we go to whichever jurisdiction where the sexual assault occurred, and then that's the law enforcement agency that takes action. And so we on the military side hope that is investigated and prosecuted on the local law enforcement side, and we don't get involved in that, or we don't take their report. I think your question is, or implication, that we would take their report and then we would actually administer the justice. Well, that's not the case. The case is, if local law enforcement is handling the case, it is actually prosecuted in that local jurisdiction through local law enforcement and the district attorney.
So there's not investigations happening by the National Guard.
Correct. So we do not do any. We no longer do any investigations internal to the National Guard of sexual assault. So what happens occasionally is the local law enforcement is notified, and then whether or not the survivor is cooperating with local law enforcement can determine whether or not they actually take the case, whether they decide that the case warrants an investigation. Obviously, that's completely out of our hands, but we cooperate 100%, and it's facilitated by our sexual assault response coordinators and our legal team here at the National Guard assist in making witnesses available, anything we can do, 100% cooperation with a local law enforcement investigation. However, sometimes they say that it doesn't meet the criteria that they would use to investigate. In that case, then the facts of the case then are transferred to the Office of Complex Investigations at the National Guard Bureau. And this would happen again, and has happened over the course of the last year, in 100% of the cases that were not taken by local law enforcement. And I'm not talking about a lot. I'm talking about a very small number. Then what they do is then the OCI then does their investigation. That is a military organization. And they do the investigation and then find it either substantiated or unsubstantiated after the course of that investigation.
Thanks for that. We're talking about the National Guard's response to sexual assault and harassment. We have Major General Paul Knapp with us. We're going to take a quick break for the weather and be back in a flash. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. We're speaking with Major General Paul Knapp. He heads up the Wisconsin National Guard, taking over after the previous general resigned after sexual assault allegations came to light in the Guard. And we're getting a status update. What's happened over the past year? We're taking your calls. 1-800-642-1234 to speak with us this morning, or ideas@wpr.org. Have you served in the Guard? Are you in the Guard? What do you think needs to happen here? 1-800-642-1234. Well, Major General, you were describing the process that we go through to get these assault allegations investigated. And I wonder, what happens to the soldiers while these investigations are taking place? I mean, these can take a long time, I imagine.
They can. In fact, they've taken way too long in the past. And that's another initiative that we're working on to try and get these investigations completed as quickly as possible to bring closure for the soldiers involved. And while the investigation is ongoing, the number one thing when a complaint comes in or a report comes in, there's a 24-hour requirement that I'm notified directly within 24 hours, whether it's restricted or unrestricted. And we have a sit-down meeting with the sexual assault response coordinator, the commander, if it's an unrestricted report, our legal team, and then our support team. And we make sure, number one, that the survivor has everything that they need and is provided every resource that we can in order to take care of them. And that's the first question I always ask is, you know, how is the person doing? Is there anything that we need to do that we haven't done yet in terms of taking care of the survivor? Then next, in the workplace, if it is two soldiers and they do work in the same workplace, then one of the first things always is to basically get them working in separate places or separated. We facilitate restraining orders if necessary through local law enforcement, and so that they don't have additional trauma beyond what was initially reported. And usually it's at the discretion of the survivor as to how that happens. And we work together with them to make sure that whatever action we take is acceptable to them and best meets their needs. That does bring up another good point in the data and the reporting is not all. In fact, the majority in the National Guard of sexual assaults that occur from like you said, the data that I've seen or the cases I've been involved in actually occur outside of the military environment. And we take reports whether it happens in a civilian environment or a military environment and whether or not the perpetrator is military or civilian. So it could be a military member who is reporting a sexual assault that occurred, on a college campus or at a workplace, a civilian workplace, that has actually no connection to the National Guard, but we still offer that National Guard member who's reporting all of the same support and services that we do if it were to occur between two service members.
Right. Well, we're at 1-800-642-1234. Have you served in the National Guard? We'd love to hear from you this morning. And we are going to go to the phones and bring on Nathan from Superior. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning.
What's your question?
My question for the general is, what happens to the investigation process when a Wisconsin National Guard person gets activated to what's called Title 10? Federal activation orders and heads overseas or takes an action under Title 10 and then is assaulted? Because my understanding, like the Office for Complex Investigations is a National Guard Bureau function, whereas I'm just curious what happens if the assault happens while the soldier or airman in the Wisconsin Guard is on Title 10 orders, possibly overseas.
Great question, Nathan. Thanks. General.
Yeah, great question. The substance of the investigations really don't change on Title 10. Across the military, the direction is that local law enforcement, depending upon jurisdiction, would be used to investigate. If the soldier happens to be overseas, it's actually a very complex answer. It depends on the status of the forces agreement with the host country and whether or not the perpetrator is another service member or a local, which, on occasion may happen. But the investigative process would either be local jurisdiction or, while on Title 10, the Army has a CID, Criminal Investigative Division. Air Force has Office of Special Investigations. And then they would be the outside independent investigating authority for an allegation of sexual assault under those circumstances. If someone's serving on Title 10 in Wisconsin on a mission, say a COVID mission, or somewhere else in the United States on Title 10, then in general, it would go to local law enforcement first and then to those investigative bodies that I mentioned.
Yeah. What results have you seen of these investigations? Have there been consequences? Has anyone gone to jail?
Absolutely. There have been consequences. And during my tenure, many of the cases that I've been seeing are cases that are very old and that were either reinvestigated or re-looked at as part of the Office of Complex Investigation strategy. But yes, we have had soldiers discharged. I'm not aware of any Wisconsin soldiers who have served jail sentences since I've taken over, but there have been discharges from the military under other than honorable circumstances. And so, yes, definitely.
So they lose their jobs, but maybe nothing else in the criminal system, anything beyond that?
Well, to clarify that, if the soldier or airman is charged by a district attorney, they would go through the civilian court process and be found they would be found either guilty or not guilty. If they're found guilty, then they would go through the entire process of whatever that sentence was on the civilian side. And that can impact, and then it would be used as well on the military side to determine whether or not the soldier or airman would continue serving in the Wisconsin National Guard. The actual sentencing and whether or not they carry out that sentence or what the terms of that sentence are up to civilian law enforcement.
Gotcha. Well, we're almost out of time, but I wonder what's next? What's on your agenda for this year? What are you tackling?
Well, okay, the next in terms of sexual assault, I really come back to our number one priority is just to continue to create and foster an environment where survivors feel comfortable and protected against any type of retaliation or reprisal, and they come forward and they get the services. It's a traumatic thing, sexual assault, under any circumstance in any status, and we just want to take care of the soldiers and airmen and the Wisconsin National Guard.
Well, thank you, Major General, for joining us this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Molly.
Major General Paul Knapp commands the Wisconsin National Guard. He's also the state's senior homeland security advisor. He oversees Wisconsin emergency management. And if you need someone to talk to, there is help. The National Sexual Assault Hotline is 1-800-656-HOPE. It's 1-800-656-4673. You'll be connected with a trained staff member from a sexual assault service provider wherever you live. 1-800-656-HOPE. Just ahead, we explore the latest science and strategies for coping with ADHD. We've got a psychiatrist taking your questions. What do you want to know about symptoms or treatments? That's coming up after this news.